Y'all ready? Y'all ready?
Yeah.
Let's go. Come on.
Tiger Rag Radio is on the air.
Let's crank this thing up.
We're statewide, breaking down the latest happenings with LSU athletics.
This is us.
Hear from the coaches.
Here in Tiger Stadium on Saturday night, there is nothing like it.
The players.
Just having fun and we working, baby. That's it, baby.
The recruits.
Show some passion and some heart.
And those who cover the Fighting Tigers of LSU and the SEC.
LSU is the best job in football.
It's 2 hours of nonstop LSU talk.
What a privilege. I mean, you get to represent LSU.
Tiger Rag Radio is brought to you by Cummins. Cummins creates power solutions that the world depends on. Louisiana Beef Industry Council. Boudreaux's Electrical Services. Sunshine Quality Solutions. Super Chevy Dealers. And Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. Get ready to talk Tigers with producer Andre Champagne and our host, Todd Horn, Jeff Palermo, and Glenn Gildo.
Great players that are better people than they are players.
This is Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Back here on Tiger Rag Radio as we begin hour number two from the Super Chevy Dealer Studio, Jeff Palermo, News and Sports Director of Louisiana Radio Network, along with the Executive Editor for Tiger Rag Magazine, Todd Horn, and the Editor, Glenn Gilbo, and Andre Champagne, our producer as well. Coming up a little bit later on in this hour, we're going to hear from Charlie Cream, ESPN Women's College Basketball Bracketologist. We'll find out if the Lady Tigers are an enigma once again this year. That was the buzzword that Charlie put on the 2024-25 team. But look good on Sunday. Fun game in beating Texas. We'll talk with Charlie about LSU and women's basketball. But, hey, it's a little chilly out, so let's crank up the hot stove. Let's talk some LSU baseball with the defending national champion, LSU Tigers. Coach Jay Johnson joins us here on Tiger Rag Radio. Coach Johnson, how you doing tonight?
Doing great. How are you guys? Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's great to have you on. Always love talking some LSU baseball. I know some fans are, now that this transfer portal thing is kind of winding down, I think a lot of fans are starting to eye that opening weekend of the LSU baseball team. I was checking out Cokie Riley's article about some of the things that he talked with you about, and, of course, Tiger Rag's going to have a baseball season preview that's going to be hitting the stands here soon. But one of the things that you, or at least Cokie, reported on was fewer position players for 2026, three less. Was that by design? Because it always seemed last year it was just difficult for you to figure out how to, and eventually you figured it out, who the right guys should be playing where, but is there a reason to have fewer position players, or is that just kind of how it worked out this season?
Yeah, kind of twofold. I think you look at, we did get a roster reduction from 40 to 34, plus some designated players. It's really complicated to explain, so I'll leave it at that. But it's technically a smaller roster. And then we got hit in the MLB draft with some of our better high school talent that we lost some guys that maybe we had hoped to keep. And so I think we had a good number of returning players where we know what we have. And so kind of all three of those factors, you know, played into it. As long as you stay healthy, I actually like it. Keeps more guys involved. And, if, like I said, if you stay healthy, it's great.
So, Jeff, I got to tell you, Glenn and I met with Jay on Saturday. Thanks, Coach, for sitting down with us to talk about the
on our
baseball.
Day off.
So, yeah,
on our day off, Johnson.
Yeah, but no, it was a wonderful way to spend a Saturday morning, and we got more scoop than Cokie got. I can tell you that right now.
We just hadn't written it yet
because we're saving it for the baseball guide. Okay, so that's all right.
I know. But, and that's why I mentioned the LSU baseball preview or the Tiger Rag baseball preview.
I know you did a great job.
Let's let Jay talk.
Let's let Jay talk. Yeah. So Jay, you know, we kind of touched on this on Saturday, but you really kind of look like you might have turned this thing around here going into your fifth season.
Yeah, we're trying to get it going in the right direction, that's for sure. And, I don't operate in those thoughts. I mean, I'm super proud of what we've accomplished here over 4 years. And, you know, we'll celebrate, you know, those two national championships forever, but we're not going to do it right now. I mean, this 2026 season, you know, demands our entire focus, our entire intent, and it's energizing too. We've had two good days of practice so far and just excited to kind of get back, wake up in the morning and get to the field every day.
Jay, you know, recruiting is recruiting and you study these guys and everything, but then you start practice and you start watching them hit. Who are some guys, some of the new players in particular, that really just kind of knocked your socks off as you began practicing in the fall league and just really impressed you?
Yeah, it's almost like you have two different recruiting classes every year now, you know, with the portal and then with high school recruiting. On the portal side, you know, we're obviously replacing Jared Jones, Ethan Fry, Danny Dickinson, Luis Hernandez, some real staple players that you're probably not going to find, you know, those guys in high school players. So we were fortunate. We got a few transfer portal guys. Zach York, probably most, you know, the most prominent one in terms of how he performed in the fall and had a great 3 years at Grand Canyon and had a little bit of an in with him because I had recruited his brother to Arizona, Nick, who's now in the big leagues with the Pirates. And so when he decided to go in the transfer portal and became available, we jumped on that one, and he's been awesome in every way you can imagine, obviously as a player, but person, leader. I think he fits in well with the supporting cast of the returners that we have. Trent Carraway, transfer from Oregon State. He's the leadoff hitter for the Beavers in the College World Series last year, third baseman. He's had a great fall defensively, made some adjustments hitting-wise, like where he's trending right now. And then Seth Dardar, transfer from Kansas State. His tryout, I guess, was he hit a homer off Cade Anderson and a double off Kaysen Evans. So that was good enough for me to say, hey, when this guy went in the portal, I think this is kind of what we're looking for. And then Braden Simpson, you know, I think all four of those guys are going to contribute. And then on the high school side, it's a small class, but it's a good one. Omar Serna, catcher, first base DH type. Mason Braun, outfield DH type. So those are kind of the ones on the position player side. On the pitching side, Cooper Moore, transfer from Kansas, and then two freshmen, Marcos Paz and Reagan Ricken. So feel like we reloaded pretty good. Now we just need to get some experience, some LSU or SEC experience under some of these guys.
Coach, talk about your outfield. You've got Derek Curiel moving to center field, coming back for a sophomore season. You've got Jake Brown, of course, in right, and you've got Chris Stanfield, who sort of surprised you by coming back. He's going to be in left, but that's a veteran outfielder. That's a fast outfield. And what can that do for you as a team and in your defense as a whole?
Yeah, I think the thing I like about it is all three of those guys were such an important part of the team dynamic of what made last year's team special. So they know what that looks like. I mean, for Derek to come into the SEC and do what he did as a freshman, I haven't seen that much in the 4 years I've coached here, a freshman coming in and transition and hitting at the top of the order one or two just about every game of the entire season and performing the way that he did. Jake Brown is a great player that I don't think gets maybe as much attention as he should. Chris Stanfield, obviously, what a season he had last year. I think he might have even led the SEC in doubles. Played a great center field for us last year. And those guys, they play the game the right way, too. And so I feel very fortunate to have all three of them back and glad that we do.
Well, talk about Curiel's physical transformation over the offseason.
Yeah, he's a very motivated young man, very motivated player. He's got such a high skill, high baseball acumen, as good as maybe just about anybody I've ever had. And the only reason he probably ended up in college was maybe a little bit of a lack of physicality, that some of that growth and maturity did not happen till, you know, he got here. And then even through last year, you know, we needed to pick it up. So he's worked incredibly hard in the weight room. I think he's gained about 16 or 17 pounds, probably 19. He'll be mad at me if he's listening to this interview. I heard him say today, walking down the tunnel after practice, that he's eventually going to get to 210. I don't know if I want him to get to 210 yet, because I like the speed element out there.
Hey, Jay, can you stay with us through the break?
Yeah, no problem.
No, okay. That was my fault. We still have a few minutes. My bad.
Oh, okay. I got a quick one for you, Jay. last year you had an uncanny ability to pinch hit guys. At one point, I did the math. You led the SEC by a lot with 30 pinch hits, and that wasn't even at the end of the season. And you know, because you were using your bench so much, is that going to happen again this season, or do you know?
Yeah, I think it can. You know, obviously, you know, having Jake Brown, Josh Pearson, you know, Mitch Chris and Derek. I mean, it was a great outfield. Had some flexibility with the DH spot until I made a decision about halfway through SEC play. If we were going to win the national championship, I just needed to put Ethan Frye in there and leave him alone. But we had some good moving and interchangeable parts, and had some guys that you could kind of really keyhole matchups. I will say I'm looking for that. And there's still some things that are unsettled, if you will. You know, talk about, you know, second base, DH, maybe a little bit of third base, you know, first base, catcher, you know, we'll do some rotating there. We can do a lot of different things. And, you know, in preparing for the season, we'll really look for where maybe we can take advantage of some things with some guys. And we have a really good pitching staff, so it allows us to expose some things and find some of those things out before we get to the season.
Coach, can you, speaking of the pitching staff, can you talk about what you got out of Cason Evans last year and what you're expecting to see out of him this year?
Yeah, he's special, man. Like, I'm sure there's been a football recruit that when they signed, everybody knew they were the guy, you know, somebody like Kevin Falk. But, you know, I said this the other day in an interview, I probably recruited him harder than any player, you know, in my entire career. You know, Derek's probably up there. Paul Skeens is obviously up there. Tommy White's up there. But yeah, he's special. I mean, the talent is something. The athlete is great. The pitcher, but the character thing is a big time separator. This guy's competitive and everything you want. So, you know, we'd like to move him, you know, up into that starting rotation, and believe he has the pitch mix to do it. And excited for that.
Well, I'm surprised Glenn hadn't asked you what your starting rotation's going to be yet.
But I'm blown away that he knew Kevin Falk, man. That was impressive, man. That was way before your time. That was 95. Jay, good.
Yeah,
I'm impressed.
So there you go. I was a high school running back in the early 90s. And so, like, I thought I was going to win the Heisman, and Kevin Falk actually was somebody that could win the Heisman.
LSU
so.
Didn't recruit you, Jay?
No. Yeah, the Orville Tigers is where I played running back, unfortunately, not the LSU.
So, you played running back in football.
Yep.
You played shortstop and second base in baseball. You were point guard in basketball. Do you think you're a leader or something, or what's the deal?
Well, the point guard thing was, like, I don't think anybody was sticking me at center. So that one was easy. And then we ran the wing tee offense, and so I could hide behind all the linemen and pulling guards and get to 12 yards before anybody could find me. And then, the middle of the field thing was, I enjoy that. I enjoy talking and communicating, and, you know, obviously was nowhere near a major league player, so. We settled for this coaching thing. So,
all right, Coach. Jay. When we come back, we're going to talk about your starting rotation.
Sounds great.
All right, let's take a break. More of Tiger Rag Radio from the Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with 5 available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious with multiple engine options and impressive towing. While Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability,
nice.
Making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your Super Chevy dealers today.
I'm Richard Fontenot, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. My brother and I grow rice, soybeans, and raise crawfish on our farm in Evangeline Parish. For a fourth-generation farmer like myself, Louisiana Farm Bureau is as much a part of my life as checking traps or harvesting rice. Our organization is more than 145,000 members strong, and we've been around for more than 100 years. The Louisiana Farm Bureau spans generations, and we want you to join our family.
Visit lafarmbureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
And we're back with Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
All right, another segment here with LSU baseball coach Jay Johnson. And Coach Johnson, first of all, thank you for spending some time with us here tonight. We appreciate stretching you out for a couple of segments here. A lot of LSU baseball fans, they're eager. They want to know as much as they possibly can know about this team heading into 2026. Glenn said we were going to talk a little bit about the starting pitchers. What's your thoughts on what potential role Zach Cowan could potentially have with this team, Coach Johnson? And also, what kind of jump will we see from William Schmidt? What have you seen from him that think that, hey, that he's ironed out maybe some of the issues he had his freshman campaign?
Yeah, I think in terms of Zach, he is extending his pitch count. There's about 9 guys were elevating their pitch count to potentially be able to start. Zach's certainly one of those guys. He threw over 100 innings at Wofford the year before he transferred here, and we're excited to see that. I think you could see him in the rotation. You could see him starting opening day. You could see him being used in a role very similar to last year, which was an first-team All-SEC performer, which is awesome. Very few guys were as important to our success as Zach was last year. And then obviously everybody saw that start in Omaha against Arkansas, so he's obviously capable of doing that. And then with William, I thought William had a great freshman season. I think, you know, there was so many expectations placed upon him, but when you start peeling it back, he was 7-0 and had some really good appearances and really good outings. He got experience pitching in the regional and the super regional. And he's also, you know, we're elevating his pitch count as well, you know, and competing for one of those spots in the rotation, and had a really good finish to the fall, and excited the way he's trending in his time here.
And who are some of the new pitchers that will contend for the rotation?
Yeah, Cooper Moore, transfer from Kansas. He was a frontline guy for them last year. I think he was all Big 12 performer and has done it. So, you know, 85 or so innings, 83, 85 innings last year. If we started today, he would probably be one of those guys. You know, we don't. We have 4 more weeks of training and those types of things before we get there. But Cooper Moore, of the freshmen, Marcos Paz, you know, who kind of similar to, he's right-handed, but kind of similar to Cade Anderson. Had he not had Tommy John surgery that wiped out his senior year of high school, I don't know that he'd be in college right now. I think he'd be in a professional organization. And then Reagan Ricken from Southern California. He was a really good high school quarterback, and no football this fall, has made a nice jump. And I think those 3 guys probably from a starting standpoint would be the guys that would get an opportunity.
Go ahead, Tom.
Okay. So Coach, we talked about this on Saturday with Glenn and I, you did, but your infield, especially the corners in the middle, except for Steven Milam at shortstop, need to be replaced. What are you looking at there?
And you said the corners, I'm sorry?
Yeah, the corners and second base.
Yeah, Zach York is far and away the guy right now at first base. And, you know, I believe one of the best, if not the best hitter on our team. At second base, I like that we have some depth. Tanner Reeves is a guy, like, I want to get in there. I believe, you know, we could have won the national championship last year had he been an everyday player at third or second. Obviously, Danny did a great job for us last year. He's improved defensively. I think he brings a lot to the table offensively, especially if he's in on a game-in, game-out basis. So I'm excited about Tanner. Braden Simpson, transfer from High Point. Seth Dardar, transfer from Kansas State. Both of those guys will be part of the first base, second base, third base mix. Trent Carraway, you know, probably the leader as we sit today at third base. And like how he's come back after the break just a couple days into it. And then we got a couple freshmen that are good players. You know, Jack Ruckert from Catholic High and Ethan Claus has a lot of ability. So we got some sorting out to do, and I'm really anxious to get into some of these inter-squad scrimmages and see where guys are at as we're moving forward.
And who's in your head for short relievers? Gavin Guidry and Maverick Rizzi, I suppose, and some others?
Yeah, John Pearson also will be in that mix for first base DH. Third base also, as I was just thinking about that last question. The bullpen, I think, will be a strength of this team. You know, we're excited to have Gavin back. Really good accomplishment, you know, to win the national championship when we didn't have him or Devin Sheeran available at all last year. So those guys will be really, really prominent guys. Grant Fontenot, who only threw about seven innings last year, has made a major step forward, and a guy that I think we can really lean on. On the left-handed side, Santiago Garcia, transfer from Oregon, some really good stuff. Cooper Williams could go either way. You know, we're building him up as a starter, but obviously he did a great job, you know, pitched great in that super regional win against West Virginia last year, got in the game in the College World Series against UCLA. So really like where our staff's at, and we haven't even talked about some of the other guys. Jaden Newt, you know, is poised for a really, really good season ahead of him. Dax Dace, transfer that we got from a Division II school that was a high-inning starter guy that we're peeling back to go for it. Danny Lackenmeyer, left-hander. So I'm really excited to get to these live at-bats this week and these scrimmages next week to see where everybody's at.
Coach, I know there's probably a lot of concern among the fan base about replacing the homers, but you have a different offensive philosophy towards that. You mind sharing that in the last couple of minutes here?
Yeah, I think we're always going to try to build a system where it fits the players that we have. It can win in the SEC, and it can also win in the College World Series, and it's two different things. You know, we play in a lot of small ballparks in SEC play, and you got to win enough games there to even be in the postseason, which is a real challenge. But if you rely solely on that, you're not going to win when you get to Omaha. And I think we have what I would call a really balanced attack team, very similar to last year, and excited to teach them to play a full game of baseball. And I thought that's what last year's team did about as good as it possibly could.
Thanks for your extended time tonight, Coach. We'll get you back on soon. We appreciate it. Good luck the rest of the way.
All right, guys. Have a great night.
Thank you.
Jay Johnson, LSU baseball coach. More coming up from the Super Chevy Dealer Studio here. This is Tiger Rag Radio.
I'm Richard Fontenot, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. For more than 100 years, Louisiana Farm Bureau has been the voice of Louisiana agriculture. Louisiana Farm Bureau advocates on behalf of all the farmers and ranchers across our great state. What that really means is we advocate for you to ensure we have the safest, most abundant, and affordable food supply in the world. Louisiana Farm Bureau is 145,000 members strong, and we want you to join the Louisiana Farm Bureau family.
Visit lafarmbureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with five available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious with multiple engine options and impressive towing. While Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability,
nice,
making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your Super Chevy dealers today.
We now return to Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
We're back here on Tiger Rag Radio. We're going to shift here to LSU women's basketball, or women's basketball in general. Great win for the Lady Tigers on Sunday in front of a raucous crowd at the Maravich Assembly Center. LSU taking down Texas, handing the Longhorns their first loss of the season. So it's probably a good time, especially considering LSU's had this very difficult start to the SEC schedule, playing three ranked teams already through the first four games. And they got another one this Sunday at Oklahoma. And we bring in Charlie Cream, ESPN women's college basketball bracketologist. Charlie, thanks a lot for joining us tonight. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me. It's the time of year where things really start to heat up and the fun begins.
Yes, it is. And you expanded everyone's vocabulary last year by describing LSU women's basketball as an enigma. How would you describe them? How would you describe them this year, considering the soft and non-conference schedule they've played? Now they come out and, you know, they're playing some of the heavyweights in the SEC right off the bat this year. Last year we had to kind of wait a little bit before LSU played some of the better teams.
Kim Mulkey's on the phone, Jeff. That's a soft comment. Let's go right to her, Andre.
I can, you know, I can know if I'm going to talk scheduling that I use my words very carefully.
I'll say it. It was soft.
She actually said, Charlie, Kim actually said last year that being an enigma was a good thing. Okay, so
was it wrapped? But was it wrapped in a riddle?
Like with a conundrum bow around it.
Right. Yeah. No, but seriously, what did you think of LSU's win over Texas on Saturday?
Sunday.
It was fantastic, and it was. I think the typical. Why do I say typical? But that framework of really good team back up against the wall. Really hard to imagine, but just three games into the conference season, but that was a must win. And because if they didn't win that game, their chances of winning the SEC were all but gone, which is crazy to say that early, but the whole having to chase down Texas and South Carolina already with three losses would have been next to impossible. So it really was a must win. And being able to deliver in that scenario, knowing how important the game was, despite the date on the calendar, was impressive, especially given the fact that Texas has, outside of UConn, had easily been the most impressive team in the country up to that point, hadn't had really any difficulties at all, except for their game against South Carolina and Las Vegas. And LSU gave them all kinds of difficulties in a lot of different ways. And LSU hadn't faced a lot of adversity up until SEC play because of the soft schedule that we just talked about. And this was a game where they faced adversity and actually came out the other side of it in a good way. Whereas in the first two games against Kentucky and Vanderbilt, they couldn't find a way to get to the finish line. And Texas presumably is a better team, and they managed to do that. So it's a really, not only is it a great win and what I said was a must win, but it's just a really good sign that maybe this team has figured out some of the things that Kim was having an issue with when the first two losses came around.
Well, and the thing that she had the issue in the first two losses in the SEC, where she said the team wasn't tough enough. They weren't able to rebound in the first game, and they turned that around in the second game, but they just weren't quote unquote tough. They were tough against Texas on Sunday. And I guess the question is Texas as good as you thought and everybody else thought they were, or did LSU, you know, burst their bubble? What happened in that game, in your opinion? What did you see happening?
Well, I think Texas is still really good. I thought LSU was really good all along, too, but we don't get the same measuring sticks with LSU in November and December that we do with a Texas. We saw Texas against UCLA and against South Carolina. But I think what it did tell me was that LSU is capable of toughness. And I was shocked at how they got pushed around by Kentucky. Mm-hmm. And Texas is presumably one of the toughest teams in the country. Vic Schaefer teams are just tough. And LSU didn't get pushed, and it very quickly fixed whatever that toughness issue seemed to be against Kentucky. With Texas, it did make me take pause because an offense that had been what I thought was a much improved offense over a year ago, they had a few more options, they could shoot it a little bit better, all of a sudden, a lot of that seemed to go away. Was it LSU's defense? Is Texas still a limited offensive team? Are they still too Booker reliant? When Harmon has a game like that, what does that do to their offense? The fact that Harmon didn't play the fourth quarter at all makes you wonder about sort of what's happening. Harmon's been great. It's playing the point guard position the way any coach would want their point guard to play it. With no turnovers, big assist numbers, playing great defense, and then all of a sudden the fourth quarter in their tightest game of the year, she's sitting down. So it made me also take pause to maybe what's happening there. Was it just because she was playing so poorly that Vic decided to go with a younger player, a quicker player? But it did raise some questions about Texas, no question. But I think the big takeaway, the big emphasis is that this is the LSU team we thought was going to be the 2026 version of LSU, not the one we saw necessarily against Vanderbilt and Kentucky.
And as a consequence, in your current bracketology this week, even though it's early, you have LSU back at a number two seed right now. Is that correct?
I do, yeah. Because they're because of their great offense in the first part of the season, their net is still very good. It's fifth in the country, and they still do have now three quad one wins. And look, they're worthy of a two seed, and they just kind of needed to officially show it. and I think in the last week they have shown that. And I expect that that's kind of where they're going to land at the end of the year. Now I do say they still have a little climbing to do. They were for all of the first 2 months, two plus months, they were the number one, number two seed. They were the number five overall on my board. They're not number five on my board right now. It certainly wouldn't shock me, though, at some point down the road they get back there. But I really foresee that they will end up a two seed because this can't be, and I sincerely don't think it will be their last big win of the season.
Charlie, what did you think of Vic's comments about the scheduling issue he has with at LSU, at South Carolina back-to-back, and the SEC conspiracy?
My first take was, that's not a Vic thing. He's not an excuse maker. That's weird. Why would he say that? Because, any good team's got to go through, tough stuff. You want your team to play on the road and kind of develop some calluses around, being in a tough environment. And he's usually not one that backs down from a challenge. And then I thought about it some more, and I thought, I think he's just politicking. He's sort of talking directly to the SEC office and saying, I don't want this anymore. Don't schedule this anymore. And he made it public, which puts a little more pressure maybe on the SEC office, and maybe he'll get more favorable scheduling in seasons to come.
Well, Charlie, we're going to have to get you on later on. We'll see how this season develops. How do you like this LSU-Oklahoma matchup? Oklahoma's stumbled here a little bit.
They have, but if two teams can really score points in this conference, it's these two. I think they're two of the top three scoring teams in the country. And now Oklahoma's been slowed down a little bit in their last few games. Did not shoot it well at all against Ole Miss or Kentucky. They're due to shoot it a little bit better, but we also saw LSU can really play defense too when the time is needed and it comes against LSU. But I do expect there'll be some points in this game if Oklahoma kind of finds that shooting range that seems to have deserted them, because it's a very good offensive team. They play with great pace and they can score in different ways. I think watch Peyton Verhulst. She's been the kind of the culprit in the slumping of the Sooners. If she comes back to her normal form, then this could be a game in the 80s, maybe into the low 90s.
Charlie, thanks a lot for your time, man. We appreciate it. Well, again, like I said,
you got it anytime.
We'll get you on here again soon. Thanks.
Sounds great. Be well.
All right, that is Charlie Cream, ESPN Women's College Basketball Bracketologist. We'll talk some LSU men's hoops. Big week for Matt McMahon's team. If they're going to turn it around, they got a couple of chances this week at home against Kentucky and Missouri. We'll talk about that when we come back on Tiger Rag Radio from the Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
Now more Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
LSU men's basketball 0-3, the only team in the SEC that's yet to win a conference game. They have Kentucky, who has gotten off to a bit of a slow start in league play, but whooped up on Mississippi State this past weekend, and maybe Kentucky's figured some things out. But two home games here for Coach Matt McMahon. Need to figure out a way to turn this thing around. Some very interesting comments from Virg Ausberry, and I'm going to go off on a little bit of a tangent here, but it's refreshing to hear from the AD. And Verge has always been great with us guys. We all know that when he was second in command. But when you, I think as a fan base and then us here in the media, we love transparency, right? But
and
I think
he's been with us as AD as well.
Exactly. And he'll be on in many more times, I would imagine, during his time as AD. And what we've known, Verge is someone, he's not one to pull punches, but in some quotes that Scott Rabelais has in The Advocate, talking about the expectations for this season. Osberry says, we've already had some discussions about what the expectations are. One thing we want to do is make sure we're in the NCAA tournament. This is Virg Osberry speaking, by the way. We made that very clear to Matt at the beginning of the year. That's where we need to be. And then I'll kind of go back to the end. Let's see. You know, he says, we'll see where it goes. Hopefully Wednesday night with Kentucky coming here, we might get a little traction, do some things. If something changes and it looks better, if the team gives us some hope somewhere, we can look at it. But we'd like to be as close to the NCAA tournament as possible this year. If he doesn't make it, we'll have to reevaluate. I'm going to support him. Matt McMahon's our coach. But, I mean, I think that the expectation has been put out there, and it's great to hear it from the AD. The fan base understands what's expected. The media knows. The players know. Everybody knows. We always seem like we're a little bit in the dark with Scott Woodward as the AD. But, all right, I'm off that little bit of a tangent. How big are these two games coming up here for Coach Matt McMahon?
Well, I think they're huge. He's got to get a win out of one of these two and hopefully then get DJ Thomas back because I just thought they had a decent team with him. And without him, they have not been that. But even if they had him, they've not guarded well and played good defense early in the last two first halves. That's why they lost the game, which is, you know, kind of strange. I mean, because defense is something that is a lot of effort. It's not necessarily talent or height or anything. And we just didn't see that. And they just started off bad. So he's got to, and he said he's going to make some changes for that. So we'll see what happens against Kentucky. But that is refreshing to hear Verge say that. I think most people kind of realize that. But yeah, when the AD is saying it and actually doing interviews, he's done interviews with us. Scott Woodward was basically invisible and he didn't even come in the office, really. He went to the football office every now and then. I bumped into him a couple of times. That's the only time I ever saw him or at a game.
I saw him in the courtroom a lot.
Yeah, saw him in the courtroom. Verge is more open and candid, and he's more communicative and also with staff. You know, I remember when Skip Bertman first took over as AD, a lot of the coaches and other people in the athletic department liked how he was always there, and they had meetings, and he was just communicative with them. And Verge is the same way, and you know, Verge sees Skip as a mentor. Of course, he sees Scott Woodward as a mentor too, and Scott Woodward was a great AD in other ways. So Verge has some great advisors that he can call, but I like the start of that he's made with his job.
Well, getting back to the basketball schedule, I mean, they do need to beat Kentucky, and I think they need to beat Missouri. And here's why, because in order to start knocking on the door of that NCAA tournament, they're going to have to then face Florida, at Arkansas. Then they have Mississippi State and at South Carolina. So they could really turn it around right now if they could steal these two before DJ comes back. But the question is DJ coming back? Because that's what's concerned me. Is that it's an old injury and not a new injury.
Yeah, and he's not, you know, he's getting better, but he wasn't close to playing in this game, which tells me he's not much of a chance to play in the next game either, but we'll see.
Well, the SEC availability report, which I hate that term, availability report, is out. He's listed as doubtful for the game against Kentucky.
Yeah, and that's what Matt said yesterday, right? Yeah,
so 14-43 in SEC play is Matt McMahon. Mm-hmm. That's rough. Mm-hmm. That's really rough. All right, let's take a break. More coming up. We'll finish up the show when we come back here on Tiger Rag Radio from the Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with 5 available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious with multiple engine options and impressive towing. While Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability,
nice,
making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your Super Chevy dealers today.
I'm Richard Fontenot, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. My brother and I grow rice, soybeans, and raise crawfish on our farm in Evangeline Parish. For a fourth-generation farmer like myself, Louisiana Farm Bureau is as much a part of my life as checking traps or harvesting rice. Our organization is more than 145,000 members strong, and we've been around for more than 100 years. The Louisiana Farm Bureau spans generations, and we want you to join our family.
Visit lafarmbureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
Tiger Rag Radio is back, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Back here on Tiger Rag Radio, some housekeeping notes before we get out of here tonight. Former LSU Tiger Colin Hurley headed to Michigan. That's interesting. He'll be a backup to Bryce Underwood. TJ Finley, remember TJ? It'll be seven different teams and seven different seasons.
How does the NCAA clear that? It's so ridiculous.
Well, he'll be at UIW, so he'll be there.
What is UIW?
Incarnate Word.
That's where Lindsey Scott ended up, I think, playing his final season, another former LSU Tiger.
They play Catholic.
So how many years?
Evangel.
How many years of eligibility does TJ Finley still have left?
This would be it.
And Trinidad can't get another year.
Right.
Yeah. Interesting. What did you guys think about this? I don't know if you saw this. FBS coaches have voted unanimously, by the way, to adjust the redshirt rule to allow players to participate in up to 9 games while preserving a full year's eligibility in the sport.
But it doesn't get enacted because it still has to be approved by the Division I something or
right,
another.
Right, but I mean, that's but just the thought of, why don't you just say you got 5 years to play – you got 5 years to play 5 seasons.
Redshirted after 9 games. That's ridiculous.
We're going to have 30-year-olds playing in college football, and it's going to become a norm.
It's like they keep coming up stuff to just make things worse, you know what I mean, or make things more complicated and ridiculous. I just don't understand it. Look at the NFL. Look how they do things. It's so organized. The schedule works. Everything works. They just don't get it.
Well, all right, so what do you think they're going to do with the college football playoff? The SEC and Big Ten, of course, are butting heads once again on this thing.
It's going to be 12 games next year, I bet.
I think it needs to stay at 12.
I really do. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, the Big Ten wants it to go to 16.
Right.
The SEC is willing to let it go to 16 if how does that work? The SEC.
I think the Big Ten wants to go to 24.
Yeah, after 3 years.
Eventually.
That's what it is.
See, I think that's a mistake, too.
That's horrible.
That's too many teams.
But if the SEC doesn't agree to go to 16, then it'll stay.
I'll tell you what's going on, too, is Greg Sankey is mad because the Big Ten is better than his league right now. And it's always made more money. And the Big Ten is starting to kind of direct things, and he can't handle it. And he needs to grow up.
I don't think the Big Ten is better than the SEC. I think the Big Ten at the top right now is better than the SEC.
They've always made more money than the SEC.
Yeah,
that's a little secret that the SEC keeps quiet.
Well, that's because they have a better negotiator and they have a better contract.
Well, and they're in bigger cities too, and they have larger enrollments
and more teams.
But they made more money when they had the same number of teams.
But the thing is I don't think that they're a better football conference.
I do.
I think they're better at the top.
Well, some people said the SEC when they were the best was tended to just be better at the top. And SEC fans forget about the average and bad teams that they have, like almost every year, Mississippi State, Kentucky, Arkansas, South Carolina.
Joe Sloan's at Kentucky right now, Murray. Yeah. You better watch out.
Big Ten's here to stay, man.
Kentucky's going to be like a hot offense next year, man.
I can hear it now, Monday night. Big Ten, Big Ten. SEC, second.
It'll be the third year, if Indiana wins, third year in a row, a Big Ten team has won the championship.
But now that Lane Kiffin's back in the SEC after leaving Ole Miss,
he's
back in the SEC. He's going to bring the SEC back because the SEC's been down since what happened? Since Nick Saban left.
You not buying Joe Sloan's going to set Kentucky on fire offensively next year?
Brian Kelly and Joe Sloan are gone. Let them go.
Joe Sloan's the offensive coordinator at Kentucky.
That's not really the SEC. It isn't basketball.
We'll find out. LSU men, big game Wednesday against Kentucky. Lady Tigers, big game Sunday. Lane Kiffin still got some portal work to do. Baseball right around the corner. Check out TigerRag.com for all the latest. If you missed the show or want to rewind, it'll be available on podcast form here very soon, both at wherever you get your podcast and at YouTube. That'll do it for us. Have a great night, everyone.
And get the starting lineups for the Clemson opener, TigerRag.com right now.
Tiger Rag is everywhere. Online at TigerRag.com. Like us on Facebook at Facebook.com/TigerRag Magazine. Or follow us on Twitter at Tiger_Rag.